Hello, and welcome to So You Think You Can Rule Persia, the podcast where we rate and review all the kings of Persia from Dayokis to Yazdegerd III. I'm Sariel, and my pronouns are they, them.
And I'm Umberto, and my pronouns are he, him. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 65, Narsay.
At last!
Unnumbered.
Yes. He is here.
We finally made it to see he has actually become king at last.
So excited.
Despite being usurped like 3 times. And now we get to see if he does a good job. Like, what are your expectations, Sarah? Do you think he is going to bring us back to the golden age? Do you think he's going to be just okay? Do you think he's going to be bad?
Well,
what are your thoughts?
You know,
like, what do you think this man will do?
Listen, it feels so wrong when you were like, he got usurped 3 times. I'm like, yeah, that's already like a bad starting point. Like, that already tells me that, like, maybe you're not gonna be the best king, because, you know, you let this happen to you. You know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, maybe shame on me, but also say shame on you. Maybe fool me thrice, at this point I don't know. Like, at this point it is my fault.
Yeah, it might be a little bit,
even though this is not
but
what I've been saying.
The third time he managed to, you know,
this is
overthrow
not what I've been saying
the
all
guy.
Of these previous episodes, so, because I do think he is the one that should have ruled, because that's what his very capable father? Yeah.
Father, yes, Shapur.
Prepared for, and I do think it sucks that his very jealous brother was like, no, it's my turn now, and then, like, obviously sucked, because we've had him and his son, his other son?
Yeah, grandson.
Oh, so he's right, so we've had him.
We've had 3 generations.
Him, his son, and his grandson in the span of the life of Narsay. Like, he's still alive, and now he's finally coming to the throne. So, like, you can guess how it went for the other kings. Not great, you know, spoilers.
Yeah, no.
So, like, I am glad that he's here. I'm glad that we finally get to see if his father was right, and that he should have ruled all along. The Empire is doing worse, because, you know, we've had the Barhams, and they haven't done, you know, put plainly. Other than, like, give victories to the Romans for some reason and lose some land and lose some stuff, and just, like, the empire overall is kind of like, eh.
Yeah.
We haven't lost that much geographically, I don't think, but also just, like, within the empire, the economic and political climate is all over the place.
Yeah, it's a lot.
We now have a really important part of the politics is controlled by religion, and also we are no longer, like, open to different kinds of religion, which is something that I appreciate in empires. Me personally, you know. So, I don't know how he's going to do. I told you already before we started recording that I am worried that he will reign for like 5 years or less and then just die. Not necessarily because he's murdered, but just because, like, he's an old man now. And there's more possibilities of you just passing away.
Yeah.
So, I I certainly do have high expectations for him, which might play against him, because, like, if I'm expecting a lot of him, then, like, maybe he did fine, but not enough for me to be satisfied. But I will be happy if at least he leaves the empire a bit better than he found it, because the 3 kings before him have made it worse. You know, so, like,
you'd like to have an uptick somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know about a new golden age. I doubt it. Unless something happens, like some good battle is won and, like, he actually has time to do a lot of reform. But I just don't think he has the time.
That's so fair. Yeah, he's not like a young 20-year-old brilliant
king. Exactly, exactly.
Because
I feel like to
start.
Usher a new golden age, you need to have the time. And sometimes 20 years is not even enough time, you know, like you need like an entire lifetime.
Like Shapur and Ardashir had 30 years roughly each, so that
and that's two of them
time.
One after the other, you know, so like
it was one of father and son.
So I don't know, like, I think we might end up a little bit disappointed, just because it might be one of these figures where we're like, oh, he was doing great, and like if he had only had more time, you can tell that he would have done amazing things, but alas, his time came and didn't get to do much more. So maybe it'll be something like that. I don't know.
All right, so let's find out what that might be like. Let's find out what Narsei actually gets to do. So just a quick recap to put some points on what the Bahrams did. The Bahrams gave a lot of the religious power over to a religious establishment, which is now a parallel nobility, which is in charge of a lot of the empire. The Bahrams fought a long, difficult war in the east with the Kushano Sassanids and risked losing, but ended up succeeding, fortunately enough. And in the west, the Romans sacked either Ctesiphon or the suburbs of Ctesiphon, and then retreated. Narsei went and defeated them, but then Bahram II gave away half of Armenia, bits of Mesopotamia to the Romans, and bought peace that way. So things are not great. We've heard about many abandoned villages in the empire. Things are not going well overall. So now, in the last episode, Bahram III was overthrown by Narsei, and well, let's see how he does. But first, we need to go back in time to Narsei's birth, because he's had quite a long storied career until becoming king, so we need to have a look at that and see how he did there. So, he is a clear break from the dynasty of the Bahrams, because, as you mentioned, he is the youngest and last surviving son of Shapur, this great king who defeated the Romans multiple times and brought a new golden age for the empire, did a great job. And, you know, the fact that he is the last surviving son of Shapur and three generations of Bahrams have passed by means that he is quite an old man at this point. Yep, like, we don't have a precise date for his birth, but we can presume he was roughly born in the early 230s, which makes him around his 60th year by the time he becomes King of Kings. So, you know, especially for the time, it is quite old. As for his parents, it looks like Narsei was a Sassanid on both his mother and father's sides. Though according to some scholars, Narsei's mother was a half-sister of Shapur. According to others, it was a daughter. According to others, it was a distant cousin. Mm-hmm. We don't really know. These are options. And this is also a possibility that this is why he was rated higher than Bahram the first. Mm-hmm. Because Bahram's mother was not somebody notable, not somebody from the royal family, while Narsei's mother was from the royal family. So he was higher up in rank just on that point of view. So, okay, let's see what was his career as a prince. So by the time Shapur had ascended the throne, Narsei was in his teens. And when Shapur had his main inscriptions made in the 250s, Narsei was king of Sakistan and was third in order of importance among Shapur's sons. Where, if you remember, Hormizd I was the king of Armenia and the favorite son of Shapur. The second favorite son was another guy called Shapur, but he dies before his father, so he doesn't really count. So we don't know what he would have done.
Right.
And yeah, this is the same list where Bahram doesn't even appear despite being the oldest son. He apparently was that terrible, and we saw that, you know, his skills were nothing to write home about.
You know. We know this for reasons.
Yeah. So yeah, the fact that Narsei has been given the important territory of Sakistan, which is the eastern border of the empire, the bulwark against the Kushans and the Kushano Sassanids, this shows that his father clearly trusts him enough. He thinks he'll do a good enough job ruling this area, which is not often at peace. It often has quite a lot of war, so it requires both military skill and administrative skill because, well, it's a kingdom you're governing. You need to see how it goes. We don't have much detail on how he does as a vassal king, but we don't have any reports of rebellions, disasters, invasions through his land. So
probably well enough.
He was doing an okay job, at least. An okay to good job. We don't know, but it wasn't going badly, at least. And so this is what he does for the length of Shapur's reign. And when Shapur dies, well, Hormizd I succeeds, as everybody would have expected. Yep. He was first in the list. Gets to succeed. Great. We're not sure if Narsei was made king of Armenia at this point, or if Hormizd didn't really have time to organize who the new king of Armenia would be. He was just governing it personally
for a
while.
Right, because he was him before. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's vacant. We don't know if he said, okay, you're next in the list. You get to be king of Armenia. Or if Hormizd was just like, I'll get to it once I celebrate my year.
Well, knowing
of
how Shapur had a 10-year plan, essentially, on what to do.
Yeah.
Or even like a 10-generation plan on what to do. Maybe he did, you know, it wouldn't make sense that he was like, oh yeah, then this is how it's going to work. This is my heir, and then the next one in line will take the place that my heir had, and then so on and so forth.
We don't know if that's the case or not. We know that it's possible. It would make sense, but no proof of it, at least. This uncertainty doesn't last long because Hormizd dies under murky circumstances within a year of his reign, and, well, then we definitely find that Narseh is made king of Armenia. And why is this? Well, because at the court in Ctesiphon, Bahram I and Kartir had gotten together to install a new line of kings, and it looks like they tried to sweeten Narseh and stop him from starting a revolt by giving him Armenia and saying, no, no, trust me, you can be the heir next. It'll be fine, don't worry. Hmm. So, interesting. You know, who knows how that goes.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Based on what Narseh tells us when he becomes king, you know, this might all be retroactive, but this is what he says, at least. It looks like he immediately did not consider Bahram to be legitimate and was just biding his time until he could actually take the throne he thought he deserved.
Like, yeah, why would he consider Bahram to be legitimate? Like, he knew his father's plan.
Yeah, but, you know, again, there was the argument that he is the oldest son, so technically that's what normal succession looks like. I mean, that's what Bahram told everybody at court, and everybody was like, yeah, sure. Hmm. So, you know, you could potentially say
disagree.
That he's legitimate. I would disagree, and yes, you disagree as well, but, you know, legally, on paper, you could say that, yep, he succeeded entirely legitimately, he was elected, the fact that Kartir supported all the nobles and was given an immense amount of power afterwards doesn't count. It's not election fraud. It doesn't go that way. Also, there's an interesting inscription from Kartir that we mentioned in Kartir's Patreon episode. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Go check it out. It was good.
Yes. And in this inscription, Kartir says that he made Hwedoda, which is a Zoroastrian incestuous marriage, legal during his tenure.
True, yes, yes.
Yes. But we have evidence of this happening before. Like, we have it all the way in Achaemenid days, if you want to go that far. You know, Cambyses already married his sisters.
That's true.
That's a thing. So what it could be that Kartir is saying is that he is trying to publicly say that Narseh was illegitimate for the throne because he was born from two Sassanids when it wasn't legal yet.
Mm-hmm.
And now that Kartir's made it legal, okay, for future cases it's going to be fine. But it's not fine for Narseh. Narseh is technically an illegitimate son, so not as good as Bahram.
Yep. I remember this, yeah.
Yeah. We don't know if this is fully what it is. I saw different scholars dispute this, but it is an option. So, it's an interesting thing to consider. Then, yeah, when Bahram I died, Narseh, despite having the title of heir and being the most capable living son of Shapur still around,
you know,
was passed over
like
once again.
Like an actual competent king.
Yeah.
To be.
And Bahram I was succeeded by Bahram II.
Yay.
And Narseh's mood significantly worsened when Bahram II gave away a big chunk of Armenia to a Roman vassal king, weakening Narseh, and despite Narseh definitely winning a battle and possibly killing a Roman emperor.
Uh-huh.
So it's Narseh says, I did all the work for you, and now you're just giving away my land. Why? What are you doing? This is terrible.
Yeah, it was bad for everybody. Everyone hated that. By everyone, I mean me.
Yes. But then we get on to last episode at last, because Bahram II dies, and he's briefly succeeded by his young son, Bahram III. And based on Narseh's own words, Bahram was crowned in secret by the noble Vanam and a small selection of the nobility. And it is possible that Vanam was trying to make Bahram his own puppet, and the nobles were unhappy with having one of them becoming more powerful than the others, because if there's somebody the nobles hate more than the king, it's themselves. So, who knows? In any case, it's not unreasonable that the nobles would want to side with Narseh instead of an extra Bahram, because there's just an unproven kid who's going to be in charge of the empire, and his father did a terrible job. Why not try for Narseh there? We know he can do a good job. We know he is skilled. Let's shift to him. Let's see how that goes. Also, as we mentioned last time, it looks like Narseh was mainly supported by the non-Sassanid nobility and vassal kings at the edge of the empire, while Bahram III was more loved by the Sassanid family and nobles more in the core of the empire. At least at first. As we saw, a large part of the nobility, including Kartir, invited Narseh to march into Mesopotamia and take the throne. So now that Kartir has invited Narseh into Mesopotamia to become king, he disappears from history. Which is interesting because he had such a large influence on the religion, but he is not remembered at all by the traditional texts. Like, again, in his Patreon episode as well, we mentioned that modern Zoroastrians don't have texts saying, oh, this is what Kartir said and this is why we need to follow it. They have later Sassanid members of the priesthood, but Kartir, no. Kartir is sort of forgotten.
Kartir, no.
We know of him through his own inscriptions.
Yeah. True, that was really strange, actually.
Yeah, that's strange. This could be that he was forgotten because he abused the religion for his own political goals, and so he wasn't thought as a good example. And everybody thought, yeah, that was kind of off. Or maybe because Kartir's version of Zoroastrianism ended up being a failed offshoot, which didn't become the official version in later centuries, because as we'll see later in the episode, Narseh does make some religious changes. So it might just be that he steered the religion in a new direction, and that's why Kartir disappeared.
Hmm.
But anyway, who knows? Anyway, Narseh is marching on Mesopotamia. He tells us that he then offered a truce to Bahram and Vanam, but they refused. And after that, there are no reports of big battles, so it's possible that Narseh was telling the truth when he says that many of Bahram's soldiers just defected to his side and Bahram just surrendered. So it was a relatively easy war. It wasn't a big, bloody civil war.
Mm-hmm.
And so when Narseh arrived in the capital, he took the rebellious noble Vanam and put him on a maimed donkey before being sent to court for execution. And we're not sure what happened to Bahram. We speculated he may have been blinded or executed. We don't know, but not a great outcome in any case. He doesn't come back into the story, so presumably it was ensured that he would not be a threat anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's also at this point that Narseh repurposes a relief of Bahram I. He changes the faces on it so that it shows Narseh, instead of Bahram, triumphing over Vanam, who remains trumple under the hooves of his horse.
Right, yeah.
And then he replaces the inscription that proclaimed Bahram's right to rule with his own. So he just chisels out, I, Bahram, am the legitimate king, and says, no, 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 I, Narseh, am the legitimate king.
Good. Honestly, like, yeah, I don't see the issue. I would be petty too, so.
Yeah, you should. If your brother had kept you away from the throne for 2 decades, you're entirely entitled to be petty.
Mm-hmm.
And you might think that this is where it all ends, but not really, because Narseh wants to make sure that the empire understands that he is going to become king because he is legitimate and because he is the best man for the job. He is not just king because his army marched on the capital. He is the king because he deserves it. So how would you do that, Serial? How would you try and prove to the empire that, no, no, you're not just a usurper, you actually have the consent of the people you're governing?
What is the question?
So Narseh wants to show that he is king, not because he marched on the capital and took it.
Right.
But he is king because everyone agrees he deserves the job. He is the best man for the job, and he is the most legitimate person available.
Well, I would, you know, get together the people who are supporting me, obviously. But also probably, like, because I have the benefit of, like, having followed this for the last episodes, I would find what Shapur wrote of his really brilliant list of, like, brilliant plan and be like, here, look,
look,
points at it, look, it's written. This is what should have happened. And also look at the Bahrams, they destroyed everything. And then if there's, like, I don't know how much of a, like, a Darius vibe he has, mm-hmm. but, like, if he wants to discredit the Bahrams, I guess he could. Right? Be like, oh, they are born of, like, the wife of this other family, and therefore they're less legitimate than I am, and blah, blah, blah. You know, you could always do that.
Yeah. Well, it looks like he doesn't go much for discrediting the Bahrams, but he definitely does
say, I feel like the Bahrams did enough to discredit themselves.
Yeah, they did enough on their own. So, they don't need help. So what happens is that Narseh shows up, and in his inscription that he writes, he only calls himself King of Armenia. He doesn't call himself King of Kings. Incidentally, he also calls Bahram III King of the Sakas. So there is no King of Kings officially, according to him, in this period. So he's saying, I wasn't rebelling against the king. There was a dispute over who should be king.
Mm-hmm.
And here I am. Well, what he does is he tries to get consent from the people who officially appoint the king.
Mm-hmm.
He gathers all the nobles in the empire around him.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, listen, it's the nobles who elect the king. I'm here now. If you want to make me king, I'm here.
You know, if you feel like it today, if you have a moment.
If you would like to. You know. Yeah. Don't look at the army that I brought to Ctesiphon.
Mm-hmm.
Pretend that's not there.
Yep, yep.
And yeah, apparently the nobles elect Narseh king, and Narseh says, no, but like, are you sure? Like, vote again. I don't want it to do it because you're scared of me. Trust me, it'll be fine. And then they vote again and they elect him. And then he says, okay, fine, then I'll be king. If you really want me to be king. Mm-hmm. I'm going to turn into it.
But because you said so, yeah. Not because I want to. Very Diocles of him.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, this is also what Augustus does.
Yep.
Augustus says, okay, I'm just going to give up all my power. It's like, oh, well, if you all really want me to stay, then fine, I'll maintain supreme power. Are you sure? Yes? Okay, fine. And yeah, apparently from Narseh's inscription at Paikuli, we get a bit of this correspondence with Narseh saying, if the nobles know of anyone in Iran who is more just, better, and more devout to the gods than we are, or more able to hold Iran peaceful and optimistic and resist its enemies, let them say so now, so the person most able to hold and govern the country may become king.
Mm-hmm.
And then the nobles replied, if we knew that there was someone more suitable than you, then we would make him king. But we know that there is not. Your majesty is the greatest and best, and your government is opportune and good.
I was like, so it's pretty clear.
You're the greatest and the best. Good.
We haven't been able to find anyone else who would be better than you.
Yes. So. It's similar to like Anastasius in the Roman Emperor series, where he just goes up to the crowd that is protesting him and says, okay, I'm going to step down if you find a better emperor than me. And everybody's like, oh, actually, you are pretty good. Okay, you can keep doing your thing. And yeah, so let's see how Narseh does now that he is actually king. We've finally gotten to the bit where he is ruler. And well, Christian sources describe him as being old, wise, and intelligent. So let's see how well that holds up. Because upon becoming ruler, Narseh decides to go back on several of the policies of the Bahrams, especially in religious policy.
Yeah. Cool. I would be very impressed if he actually manages to go back. Because after you give power to a certain group of people, is really hard to take it back because now they have power. So,
yes.
What are you going to do?
Complicated.
Yep.
He's going to try his best.
I see. It also hasn't been that long. Like, that's the thing.
The it's three been Bahrams, 20 years.
It has been long, but the three Bahrams 25. Happened in like a very short period for like being three kings, right?
Yeah, so, sure. It's not been 100 years, but yeah.
I don't know. But 20 years is plenty. So, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, he decides to go back on Cartier's policies of persecution and says, I don't care what religion you are, just, you know, pay taxes.
Be nice.
You're not going to be persecuted. It's fine. It's okay. And in particular, he goes to the Manichaeans and tells them, sorry about killing your prophet. That wasn't me.
Whoops.
But you can be protected and convert new people to your religion. It's fine. And yeah, it looks like this change wasn't really immediate, but happened after an Arab king who supported Narseh's takeover spoke on the Manichaeans' behalf and asked Narseh to stop the violence. And Narseh said, yeah, fair enough. Let's do that. And for all the rest of his reign, the Manichaeans were not only allowed to exist, but to preach freely across the empire and grow their religion. It also grew quite a lot, and it began to spread into the Roman Empire, where the Manichaeans were persecuted.
Whoops.
Because they can't catch a break.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah, because the Romans see Manichaeism as sort of a Persian religion and a threat to the state. They're like, oh, you're foreign spies infiltrating us.
I mean...
So, Yeah. I mean, the Manichaeans were persecuted in Iran until like 2 years ago. I don't know how this is a Persian infiltration, but fine. Romans, you do you, I guess. They weren't paying attention to the Bahrams, I suppose. At the same time, the Christians in the empire were also tolerated and given the freedoms of religion that they would like to have. So, hooray! You can be whatever religion you like now. That's good. But this doesn't mean that Narseh abandons Zoroastrianism entirely. He doesn't, like, throw everything away. Because in his inscription, he puts great emphasis on Ahura Mazda and the Yazata Anahita, which is basically a Yazata of the waters, fertility, healing, and wisdom, which the Greeks syncretized with Athena, which I guess kind of works, but half and half. And yeah, Anahita is especially important for Narseh because she is the goddess of the fire temple traditionally held by the Sassanid dynasty and that Bahram II had given away to Kartir. And now Narseh is taking this temple away from Kartir and putting it back into royal hands. So he's returning this traditional role of the monarchy back to where it used to be and trying to reduce the impact of the religious establishment that's there. Also, a related goddess to Anahita was very popular in Armenia, so, you know, Narseh's been king of Armenia for 20 years. Maybe he just particularly liked this cult and thought he would like to spread it out across the empire.
Hmm.
In his inscriptions, Narseh tells us that his legitimacy flows from the far that was given to Ardashir first, Shapur second, and now him after it was lost. So according to Narseh, the official version is that after Shapur died, nobody had the right to rule, and that's why it was going poorly. And then he managed to pick it back up. The gods blessed him once more, and he managed to become King of Kings properly.
Hmm.
Another interesting element of Narseh's reign, which is quite speculative, it's based on an absence of evidence, so, you know, pinch of salt and everything, but we'll see, is the fact that he never mentions any of the noble families, except for the Karen and Suren families, who helped him out during the brief civil war.
Right.
He doesn't mention them in his inscriptions, which could imply that he was intent on trying to centralize power and reduce the strength of the nobility. So it would make sense that after the Bahrams were giving away a lot of royal power, Narseh is trying to take it back and ensure that all these nobles have less than an influence on how everything is run. But we're not sure. It's possible.
Hmm.
But okay, Sariel. Now there is something we need to face.
Oh.
Because, as you remember, Narseh was wronged by two sides. He was wronged by the Bahrams, and he's gotten his revenge. He is finally King of Kings.
Right.
But who else was he wronged by when he was King of Armenia?
The religious leader. Right?
Also,
he sided with the Bahrams. Yeah, but I mean, we saw it on his episode that we have on Patreon.
Yeah.
But I didn't know if, you know.
Yeah, no. But we've dealt with Kartir. He's disappeared from history. We've tried to
bring
back religious toleration and all that. But there was one last thing that sort of injured Narseh's pride
there
that
was
he would like to fix.
The victory against the Romans that then went completely negated by like giving the Romans a bunch of things, even though we won. Is that it?
Yes, that's it. Narseh thinks, I only have half of Armenia. I want to get it back. I won the last war, basically.
Yeah.
Now that I have the resources of the whole empire, I should definitely be able to do a good job of it.
Revenge!
So, off we go.
Revenge!
The thing is that Narseh wasn't the only one trying to, you know, start this fight, but the Romans were also into it, because they had just emerged from the crisis of the 3rd century. Diocletian is now in charge of the empire, if that means things to you.
To be honest, I don't remember enough. I don't remember enough about the empire.
Fine. And well, Diocletian wants to prove to Rome in general and the world at large that the victories of Shapur, who defeated 3 Roman emperors, they were a fluke. It was
what,
just a thing
they don't
that
matter?
When we were
like,
weak. They don't count.
We still
he wants
won.
To go back, defeat the Sassanids, and say, no, it's just like the Parthian days of old. We can kick your butt anytime we want.
Disagree.
What happened last century was a mistake. We gotta do over now.
Disagree, but go on. I guess two are ready to fight, so we're gonna fight now.
Yes.
And lucky you, you're not gonna fight Bahram. You're gonna fight Narsay, who already
Competent. And yeah, so right now, the person that Narsay is going to be facing is the Caesar Galerius, because we have the Tetrarchy system, you know, where there are four Roman emperors, two Augusti, two Caesars.
Yeah.
They're trying to divide stuff. It kind of works. Could have been better, could have been worse. But anyway, the Caesar Galerius is stationed in the east of the empire, east of the Roman Empire, and is fortifying some old Seleucid fortifications in Syria, and he is placed ready to attack Mesopotamia. And at the same time, Narsay is stationing his army in northeast Mesopotamia, waiting to see what the Romans are going to do, so they're just waiting for somebody to make the first move.
I see.
And, well, we don't really know who attacked first. We know that someone did, and...
Yeah, because then things happen, so...
It's possible that Narsay invaded the Roman vassal kingdom of Armenia to try and get all of Armenia back together.
Yeah. I don't know why that would be a problem. We both want war. So at this point, who cares who attacks first? Yeah, it's not like we're breaking a truce
trying to see
and
what
like,
happens.
Oh no, this is terrible. Like, we're both looking for it, so like, who cares? Yeah.
I don't know how long the treaty that was made with Bahram was meant to last for, but... You know, you don't want to be seen as the aggressor. You want to be seen as, oh, we're just defending ourselves.
Well, as the Romans usually say, oh, that was a treaty with the previous king, not with this king.
Exactly. You can just do that. It's so, fine. The
if
Roman
they can
emperors
say it,
have changed.
We can say
the
it.
Assassin kings of kings have changed. It's there. So yeah, whatever the case may be, in spring of 297, we get the first battles between the two sides near Carrhae, which is auspicious because, you know, good old Crassus died there. That was fun.
Yeah. Do you want a second? Let's do it.
And, well, the Caesar Galerius is utterly defeated by Narsay.
Yep.
Narsay wins a stunning victory, which destroys the Roman army that was present in the east.
Sorry. I'm just like, yeah, what did you expect?
And this quite angered Diocletian, who apparently humiliated Galerius in either public or private, depending on the sources you want to believe, but...
Depending on how spicy he was feeling that day, I guess.
Yeah. So what do you think Narsay does now? He's won a great victory against the Romans. What's the next step?
Do we keep going?
Well, Narsay has decided that he doesn't want to be caught off guard by going into Roman territory. Because yes, he's defeated an army.
Fair.
But there are others.
Yeah, fair.
He thinks he's going to be cautious. He's going to turn back, see what the Romans do.
This is why he is competent. And he should have been king.
Pretty good.
Like, you know, turns out the very also competent and intelligent Shapur considered to be the one who should succeed his most competent son is actually good at his job. Wow.
Pretty good, yeah.
Surprise. Nobody could have seen that coming. God, the Bahrams. I swear to God.
So yeah, the next year, Galerius took a new army strengthened by troops from the Danube. And marched back, started a new campaign attacking the Persian lands. But the problem is that at this period, Narsay was in Armenia. His army was over in Armenia, and he wasn't really expecting a Roman attack. He was expecting them to move into Mesopotamia. And so while he was relatively relaxed in Armenia, he was suddenly attacked by Galerius's forces.
Nobody expects Galerius's forces.
No. And... very sadly for our boy Narsay, this is a terrible defeat. He was not ready, and the Romans managed to capture many important things. They capture several important nobles.
Who cares about the nobles?
They capture the state treasury that we pay our soldiers with.
That's worse. That's a problem.
And they capture Narsay's family, including possibly his heir.
That's bad. That's
Narsay
bad.
Himself was wounded. And he managed to escape, you know, he managed to escape a reverse Valerian, but it's not a good look. It's not fun. Yeah. Heck.
We wanted to be cautious and we forgot that, like, maybe we should defend.
Press the advantage, maybe, but try to do that, but there we go.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah.
When you ask me, like, oh, what does he do now? I'm like, are you going to say that he died?
Because
I hate
not
when you
yet.
Phrase
Still
it that
has a
way.
Bit.
When you're like, what does our king do next? Oh, actually nothing.
Yes, he dies at the end. But no, Narsay still has to live. Because, I mean, on the bright side for him...
Like, disappointed.
I mean, it's one of those things where if he had died earlier, it would have been just like, oh, he's doing really well. And then it's like, oh, no, he got defeated. That's sad.
Yeah. Well, he did well before.
Oh, he definitely did. Good news for Narses' family is that apparently they were very well treated by the Romans.
Oh, that's nice.
And a Roman source says that in admiration for this, the Persians admitted that the Romans were superior not only in arms, but in behavior.
No.
Which feels Shut like up. Roman propaganda, but yeah. You know.
Fine. What, like the Persians are not capable of like being kind to their prisoners?
Yeah.
We can. We just choose not to because you're Romans. And you're the worst. It's different.
Yeah. I mean, the Romans, you know what you did. It's fine.
Exactly.
But, you know, it's nice that somebody's being treated well for a change. You know, there's so many times where they've been harmed otherwise. It's good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, following this defeat, Narses sued for peace.
Sued for
he
peace.
Saw that.
I love this expression. They take you to court and you have to stop fighting.
Lawyers were involved. And, he is forced to sign quite a humiliating treaty, which is not fun.
Especially I'm so since sad he was to hear. No.
I know. It's very disappointing.
God. Damn it.
And, yeah, apparently during negotiations, Narses' envoy is said to have told Galerius, "It is clear to the race of men that the Roman and Persian empires are, as it were, two lamps. As with two eyes, each one should be adorned by the brightness of the other and not forever be angry, seeking the destruction of each other."
Yeah, actually, that's a great point. I like that. What if we stop fighting, guys?
Yeah. Eventually, you will be happy to know that somebody does take that advice and is just like, "Could we not get along? Is that cool? Okay, good. That's nice, thanks." We actually get to be friends with the Romans at some point.
Yeah, I think it's so sad when, like, you define your nation or you define your group of people, right, as, like, not them. You know, you define your identity by othering someone else. And, I mean, like, it's an easy way to do it, right? But, like, I would like to think we have learned past it. We haven't, by the way, in case you haven't noticed how the world is doing.
Yeah.
But it would be nice.
It would be nice if we did. Yeah, it's going to get worse before it gets better in our story, Sariel, but, you know, we'll get through it. We'll see how it goes. And yeah, the ambassador also apparently said that Narses should not be considered inferior to any ruler. But he then says that Galerius is so much greater than any other ruler that he doesn't really fit in the scale, so that it's fine that Narses
admits cheating.
To him. Yeah, it's like, although the ambassador also says that Narses is still as great as Shapur and Ardashir.
Okay.
Because, you know, he's still amazing. He's just, you know, bowing down to the Romans because they're so much cooler now and everything is so much better that...
God, they're, you know, it's going to go to their heads. They're going to be insufferable for the next, like, 50 years.
Is. They are definitely going to be pretty much exactly for the next 50 years. Then things happen, but we'll get to that when we get to it.
I see. I'm getting like a good feeling of like how long things last here.
Yeah, it's good. Pretty good. And yeah, apparently Galerius was not terribly mollified by these diplomatic words. And he cited the fate of Valerian to say that the Persians were already getting better than what they deserved. So that they should just be thankful that they're not doing worse.
Well, we did beat your ass. Like, you were just lucky.
Yeah.
I feel like we are pretty even. So.
Yeah, we each won one battle. It's just that.
If you don't count the previous one, which we totally won. The treasury. If, you know, Bahram hadn't been stupid.
Yeah. And yet Bahram existed.
Yeah. That's on us, actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
So sorry.
Could have done better. Sorry. Yeah. So, yeah, we're told that Narses tried to stall the negotiations while his army regrouped to maybe try and gain more leverage, but the Romans were like, no, we're signing the peace treaty now. You're not getting any chance to do anything fancy.
That's fair.
So, yeah. In exchange for his family and peace, Narses was forced to give up all the lands that Shapur had gained in the west
basically
return to the late Parthian borders.
No!
Yes, it's sad. With the northern border being defined by the Tigris, not the Euphrates anymore, and the Romans gained some client kings beyond the Tigris. Also, trade between the two empires was only be conducted at the Roman city of Nisibis on the Tigris, so that the Romans could limit any spies going through and gather tariffs easily and avoid smuggling of goods and make sure that they get a lot of money from all the trade going through.
You can't see my face right now, but I'm not happy.
As well you should be. Narsay tried to resist this last point, but apparently he was told this isn't a negotiation. If you want your family back,
we're just telling you what we're taking them.
Yeah. And yeah, I can imagine that also the worst element for his own pride was that Armenia was entirely lost to a Roman vassal king. Armenia's not in the empire anymore.
Yeah.
Mm. Also, Iberia, which had an Sassanid vassal king, is now a Roman vassal.
That's my people?
That's gone. Yes, exactly. Those Iberians. And so everything is kind of leaving the empire in the west. Also, the Romans get to keep Valerian because we didn't win a war yet. Hopefully we'll get Valerian back one day.
That is so funny that we just like ping pong this cadaver. Yes,
we should ping pong this poor man.
Yeah.
And yeah, fun fact to lighten the mood is that this new Roman vassal king of Armenia would make Armenia the first officially Christian country in the world.
Oh, heck.
Which, I mean, the Ethiopians would dispute that, but their sources are more limited than the Armenian sources, so who knows?
So feel free to dispute, I guess. But,
yeah. So guess what, Serial? It's great. Now Armenia isn't only in the middle between the two empires, it's also a different religion. That's
great.
Going to make things easier.
That's going to be fine. It's going to be okay. It's gonna
I'm sure everybody's
no going to
be really cool about this and not cause any problems.
It's not going to be an issue at all. Yeah. As we know, these things always are fine.
In any case, it's likely that the Romans could have gained more from this peace, but that Diocletian was in a we-need-to-stabilize-the-empire mode, so he decided to
push it.
Relatively less. Yeah. But
I feel like they pushed it plenty.
He knew he could hold on to. But yeah, exactly. They pushed as much as they could reasonably keep. They're not going to take Mesopotamia. They're not going to try a Trajan and try and conquer Mesopotamia. They know they can't hold it.
Like yeah,
Trajan
they
failed.
Will conquer it maybe and then be like, okay, bye within the next like generation. So
yeah, so it's not worth it. They'll stay like this.
Don't even try.
So this is how peace has been established in the end, but a very Roman favorable peace.
Yeah. Yet again, I blame the Barums. I know it was Narses' fault in this case, but nah.
Yeah, he was given a bad hand. Like, the Barums messed things up. And also, it's like when the Romans are reviving, so it's a bad situation all around. So for Narses, who came to the throne with the claim of divine favor, this is a terrible outcome both internally and externally, because, you know, you came to the throne showing, oh, no, heaven is with me. I'm here to fix things, and then you lose this war quite badly.
Yeah.
That's not good. But also now he's in his 70s. He is an old man. He is tired. He has been fighting for so long. He just wants to secure a stable succession and make sure everything is fine. He does not have the strength to, like, keep fighting. He is, that's it. That's all. And just to show how bad this is for the empire, it looks like Narses begin to omit the and non-Iran section of the royal title, King of Kings of Iran and non-Iran. So the vibe isn't great. But yeah, Narses would only live a few more years after this defeat, but his prestige was seriously shaken, and we can assume that most of his time was spent trying to control the nobles and make sure nobody rebelled, and trying to get his son and heir Hormizd. Son or maybe grandson, we're not sure, but Hormizd, which I thought was quite cute because he named his son after the brother that was the most capable. So that's nice. That's sweet of him. But yeah, in the end, Narses died in 303 and was succeeded by his son or grandson, Hormizd II. In a nice, stable succession, at least. Narses managed to handle that cleanly. But yeah, we'll see what Hormizd II does next time. But that is the end of Narses' life. What did you think of him?
Wait, how did he die?
He just died of disappears from the sources.
Oh, that's a bit disappointing. But also, like, you know, makes sense. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, presumably it was a natural death. We can assume it was fine.
Like, yeah. That was pretty okay. Yeah, it is not exactly what I expected would happen. Like I said at the beginning of the episode. But it follows a bit the same vibe of, oh, it could have been so much better, and it wasn't. But it is, at least it wasn't, like, it hurts a bit more because it was Narsay's fault, to a degree. He fucked up.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
the Romans won. And yeah, like, he lost a huge battle and then dealt with the consequences. So that's really sad.
I feel bad for Narsay because, like, in a storybook sense, you know, he's the legitimate prince. He's back. The kingdom is going to be great. And now he'll win everything. And then he's like, oh, no, wait, actually, he just got defeated. Yeah. It's like, oh, that's annoying. That's a shame.
Yeah, it's very anticlimactic.
Yeah, it's kind of...
Especially because he started with a huge victory. We'll so you were like, oh, finally, yeah, we're exactly. so back.
Like, the beginning was like, okay,
we're so
we're
back.
Done.
And then
we're
suddenly,
here.
Whoops. No. This is it, fellas.
Yeah, so there we are. In that case, are you ready to rate him, Serial?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, let's go.
I'm excited.
Our first category is final moments. How interesting was his death? He fades from the sources after securing a succession.
Eh. At least he secured a succession, you know.
Yeah, that's nice, but, you know.
But the death itself,
Yeah, the death is just like, there's nothing there. We literally do not even know.
Yeah.
It's just zero.
We don't even have a detail. Yeah.
So, yeah. With a zero and a zero, we get a 0 out of 10 for final moments.
Sorry.
Our next category is battle hardness. How good was he at war and fighting? We have things. We have stuff.
Well,
so
you see, I was like, wow. I had an opinion, and then my dreams were shattered.
Yeah. Yeah. It's sad. But okay, let's just go through his career.
Mm.
So as king of the Sakas, we don't know of anything special he did. Like, we just don't have the sources. He may have been fighting. He kept the border stable while Shapur was fighting. We don't know much more.
Hmm.
We definitely know that he was accompanying his father on military expeditions and did a good enough job that he was appointed king of a very important region. So that's pretty good. He must have had something there. Then as king of Armenia, during the reign of Bahram II, he fought off the Romans and possibly killed a Roman emperor in single combat.
True.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
that's
pretty
great.
Badass. That's the kind of thing that you'll think of and tell to your children.
And then as king of kings, well, he leads an army and marches on Ctesiphon.
Yeah.
We're not told if there was a battle. If there was a battle, it was very quick and everybody switched to his side as soon as possible.
Yep.
So, you know, there's only so much credit you can give him there, but he did basically defeat Bahram III in military matters. And then, yeah, as king, he managed to fight and defeated Galerius's army at the start. That was a great victory at the beginning of the war. But, of course, the elephant in the room is that, in the end, he does lose this massive battle in Armenia and has a bunch of things that are taken from him. And he's forced to sign a pretty humiliating peace. Like, it's a peace that undoes everything his father ever did.
Yeah, which is the worst. Like, it's worse than what the Bahrams had to deal with. Which,
is harsh. But, yeah, I think that's more on the Aaron Shine. But I think for battle hardness, he was good, generally. I think that the Armenia thing was that he was caught by surprise and was outmaneuvered. And it just happened that way. So I don't know what to do. I feel like... So let me sum up my points this way. So I'd give him a point for his career as king of the Sakas as a young apprentice to his father. I give him 2 points for winning the Armenian War, you know, and killing... No, 2 points for winning the Armenian War and 1 extra point for... possibly killing Numerian, because that's pretty cool. And then I think I'm just going to average out the great victory against Galerius and the great defeat against Galerius. And I feel like I'd give him a 5, because I think he does deserve that recognition.
That's the thing, is like he did great things and then he did terrible things.
I know.
Because the defeat is so bad. So bad.
It is really bad.
I feel like someone stabbed me. Like, I'm so sad. I was not ready to be so disappointed.
It is really depressing. I just feel bad for the man. But yeah, I feel like I'm going to go for a 5. I think he needs the credit where credit is due.
Yeah.
It ultimately did end in failure, but like all the race, he was doing so well.
That's the thing, though. Like, you have to give him some points for the good old times, the good old days, you know. But then, oh, so bad. But obviously the man can fight. But also, Is 5 like middle of the road?
5 is middle of the road, let me see.
Because we also just like don't give any points if people don't, you know.
Yeah, previous 5s that you may remember are...
You overestimate how much I remember of this podcast.
Yes, I'm trying to find any especially memorable ones. Because 5 middle of the road isn't an especially memorable grade. Let's see. Antiochus the 4th, you gave him a 5, I gave him a 6 for almost conquering Egypt and then the Romans kicked him out. Hormizd the 1st got a 6 for helping Shapur a lot during his wars in the West and then not doing much as king. So he did that. Antiochus the 1st got a 6 because of keeping the empire stable after the death of Seleucus. Xerxes got a 6. Xerxes the 1st. So that's roughly what we're playing.
I think that's too much for boy.
I also
here.
Definitely don't think a 6, but I think a 5 is deserved.
I don't know, because like, why... If we go by, like, battles, I think I will go for a 4.
Fair.
I'm not going for less because the ones that he won, like, tremendously, militarily, he did great. But then the ones that he lost terribly. So, a 4.
Okay, so with a 5 and a 4, we get a 9 out of 20 for battle hardness. Our next category is scheminess. How good was he at plots and manipulations? He has something here. He basically has the fact that he managed to somehow gain the support of Cartier and enough of the nobility that he managed to overthrow Bahram the 3rd.
Yep.
That he clearly had some ability to convince,
threaten,
and cajole
people. But did he do any
campaign
of, like, you know, discrediting or slander or...
We know that when Bahram the 3rd succeeded... A bunch of nobles were like, I don't know about this guy. Maybe we should go for Narseh. And also, Cartier, the strongest supporter of the Bahrams, flipped to Narseh.
That is true. Yeah.
And we don't know how or why.
We also don't,
so clearly Narseh isn't doing a terrible job in scheminess.
I don't know how much. I guess.
On the downside, he is outmaneuvered by Cartier and previous Bahrams.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
like right now and not before, you know.
Not the head of everything, but, you know, he's had 20 years to plot and scheme.
Yeah.
So maybe it just took time to build up that support.
Honestly, Cartier played his cards so well. Because he got to have 20 years of, like, almost absolute power. And then when he saw how the tide was changing, he changed sides and wasn't, like, punished for it.
Yeah.
He lost He lost some of his power, but not all of his power and not his life. And he was just like, okay, you know, I have an easier job now.
Cool. Yeah.
Which, yeah.
He gets to retire with an easier job.
Exactly.
That sounds great.
Like, who wouldn't like that?
Yeah, Cartier did an excellent job for himself. He was very impressive. So for Narseh's scheminess, what are you thinking?
Maybe like a 2.
I'm floating between a 2 and a 3, yeah. Because it's fine. Nothing terribly impressive.
No, but it's still there. So I was like, I mean, I'll recognize that it's there, but...
Yeah, I think I'm also going to go for a 2. There's not that much juice there, but there we are. So with a 2 and a 2, we get a 4 out of 20 for scheminess. Our next category is shock factor. How shocking was this man? Well, he's kind of the opposite.
Yeah, he's reliable.
Yeah, he's reliable. He's good. He does stuff. He is...
He made less shocking policies.
Yeah, he stopped the persecutions. That's good. That's nice.
Which we gave shocking points for Bahram.
Yeah, for the Bahrams.
Yeah.
Things that are shocking is that he commits the first public usurpation in Sassanid history.
True.
He is the first guy to march on the capital and make himself king.
Yeah, true. Very Roman of him. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Although, officially, he did have the nobles vote for him twice and say, are you really sure if there's anyone better?
That's true. He did a Diocese of, like...
Yeah, but it's also like, would he really have stepped down, or would he, was he just trying to look good? It was like, oh no, fine, I'll just go rule Armenia.
Looked at them like,
yeah, it's fine. I'll be usurped for a fourth time. That's okay. Yeah. I'm not going to be mad.
Imagine.
So that would have been unlikely. So that's slightly shocking, the fact that he takes those lands. I don't know how much you want to put in shocking that he reverses all the deeds of his father.
God, yeah, no, that defeat,
that's,
like...
That's oof. Harsh.
Yeah.
It's like,
I'm
oh,
so
no.
sorry, but...
It's just... Ow.
That has to get some points.
Yeah.
Just because I cannot believe, like, how that happened. He just had a great victory, and then the Romans were like, we're not done! And he was like, oh, shit, I was getting changed, what?
Yeah, he pulled a Hannibal, where he won really well early on, and then eventually got destroyed at the end.
Yeah.
Because the Romans don't know when to quit.
But even worse, because at least Hannibal lost because Carthage stopped funding him.
Yeah, fair.
Because he was, you know...
Narsi has no one else to blame.
Kind of harsh and stuff, but, you know, he was winning.
Yeah. Narsi's just like, he was the king. Nobody was stopping him.
Yeah. He just considered that he needed a breather. And the Romans were like, whoo! Like, did this really happen this way? I don't know. I'm so, like...
I mean, he didn't...
What do you mean?
Yeah, basically, Narsi just retreated to regroup. And was in Armenia for a while, and the Romans snuck up on him and attacked him.
Just sent a bunch of
at the start
like,
of the
legions.
Campaigning season. And it was just, yeah, and Narsi got outmaneuvered. It just happened. Also, as a mild shock factor, if Cartier is right, and that's a big if, then Narsi was sort of semi-illegitimate because he was... the son of Shapur and Shapur's
that's just some
slash
that's just some BS.
I don't believe it.
That's some legal, you know.
If you wanted to consider that, yeah.
Nah. But the defeat, I would give some points.
Yeah, I'm thinking a 3.
What for?
I'm thinking a 3 for 1.5 points for the usurpation and 1.5 points for the defeat.
I see. So you're going like with half points.
Yeah, that's my reasoning.
I'm thinking if I want to give each like 1.5 points as well or just one. I think I would give 1.5 or even 2 for the usurpation because that's the first time that it happens, that someone marches with their own troops in like friendly territory.
Yes.
Because we've had usurpations before, but I don't think they happened this way.
Among the Sassanids, the only usurpation we had was basically a private usurpation when Bahram I took the throne. And that wasn't like... visibly a usurpation. It was just the nobles voting for somebody unexpected.
Yeah.
So Narsi is the first time somebody's just showing up and very publicly saying, here we are, I'm king.
Yeah, I think that deserves at least 1.5, yeah. Yeah, no, I think I'll match you on a 3. I was going to go for a 2, but like, you've convinced me.
So yeah, with a 3 and a 3, we get a 6 out of 20 for shock factor. Our next category is Aaron Shine. How good was he for the Empire in general and Iran in particular? Well.
Well. Oh, man. I cannot believe this is going to be worse than the Bahrams. Like, I
don't
refuse.
Know if it's going to be...
I refuse. But it might.
So, let's start with the
can
positives.
Can we just pretend that this didn't happen? Like, at this point, can we just, like, be in denial?
Can we just pretend he had a stroke, like, the day before the battle happened and everything was fine?
Like, one of the Bahrams came back and was like, I want to, you know... I am so mad at this. Like, I'm not okay. I'm not okay with it.
Okay, so, positives. He stopped the persecutions in the Empire. If you're of a non-Zoroastrian religion, you can now worship freely across the Empire, proselytize. It's great. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's
if you're
great.
A citizen of the Empire, good stuff. That's pleasant. You've also gotten out of the reign of the Bahrams, so the king is becoming more powerful. Religious authority is returning to the king. He is trying to reduce the influence of the nobles, it seems. We're not certain, but we can extrapolate that. So the state is becoming more powerful, easier to govern, and nobody's being persecuted anymore, so that's great.
Cool.
On the downside, We've lost Armenia, we've lost Iberia, we've lost several bits of Mesopotamia. Any trade with Rome can be conducted only through the city of Nisibis, which the Romans get all the tariffs for. It's not good. All of the achievements of Shapur have been cancelled.
Oh, that one hurts especially.
That's not good.
On how to disappoint your very strict father.
Yeah.
Once you actually get the chance. Because before you could be like, oh, I never got the chance. Which like, oh, kind of also your fault, you know, like.
Yeah.
That you let the Barams just take it from you. But.
Well, to make a compliment sandwich, Serial, his succession is very clean. He makes his son succeed and everything is fine and he plans for it.
Yeah.
Well, that's
thank
good.
God. I don't like this episode.
Yeah, I don't know what to give him for Aaron Shine.
Like a 3?
I was also thinking 2 or 3. Because, you know, the stopping persecutions is good. That's great. Everybody's happier for that.
Yeah, but I don't see any other good things.
Yeah.
Because they were cancelled out.
Yeah.
Maybe just a 2. Not a 1 because, like, I don't know, the Empire is still...
No, I don't think he deserves a 1.
There, and the succession
the Empire...
is okay. Yeah. But, like, I think a 2. You can tell that I'm upset because I'm, like, talking up here and being very sad about it.
You're going for a 2. I don't know if a 2 or 3 because, like, the Empire is still there. That's token point. The succession is stable. That's good. I'll give him a 3 because of stopping the persecutions and consolidating power and trying to reverse a lot of the Bahram's policies. I feel like he deserves that much credit. So, yeah. So are you going to stick with a 2?
Yep.
So with a 3 and a 2, he gets a 5 out of 20 for Aaron Shine, which is 1 point below Bahram the First, which really stings. That's really harsh. But yeah, there we go. Our next category is Face of Faces. What do you think this man looked like? Oh, and let me send you the crown. I don't have the crown. I should have done that. But I think he has 2 crowns, which is pretty cool. So you can feel free to choose whichever crown is your favorite.
Okay, I'm gonna draw something, I'm sure.
Okay, so Serial has finished their drawing. Let me pick it up and I will describe it to you all. Yes, fair.
I think it encapsulates how I feel.
Yeah, that's entirely accurate. So what we have here is, well, how do I describe it? Well, we have Narsay, sadly, in his white hair and beard, in his old age, putting his seal to the humiliating peace treaty with Rome while his crown rests next to him. And while he is doing this horrible thing, he is thinking, remembering the great deeds of his father, Shapur, who shows up in a thought bubble, riding on horseback, victorious, waving his bow in the air, conquering new lands, defeating Romans, and now Narsay has reversed all of that. It's over. It's gone. So, it's very sad, but yes. If any of you would like to see this, you can go to the episode notes down below, or you can go to our website in Serial's Portrait Gallery, or you can go on the Discord if you're a patron. Now, Serial, let me show you what he actually looked like, or not. Here he is. This is him in the middle.
Ah.
To the right is Anahita, and to the left is his heir Hormizd.
Oh, nice. Yeah, this is very pretty.
That's faded away.
Very, God, the hair. I wish I had drawn this hair. It's so good.
That's very
nice. It's so, like, voluptuous and, like, full of curls and just gorgeous. And also the crown looks really cool. Much taller, like, you know, not the part that is like a poof covered in the fabric, but the part that it's, I guess, is some sort of metal, or the part that is, you know,
I imagine
that actually touches
your
head is much taller than other crowns, and it's really pretty. And also, you can see the clothes and the folds on the pants, and like it's really good relief. I really like it. I love the stylization.
I especially like Anahita's dress. The detail on it is very nice.
I love this. This is gonna get like an 8 from me.
Also, just as a note, if you see his son Hormizd, you can tell that he's king of the Sakka because he also has a horse hat.
Yeah, true. We've seen that before. Nice. Oh, that's really cool. Yeah, this is getting an 8 for me because it's also contemporary. It's in fairly okay condition. I love it.
We've seen better ones, but yeah, I also agree an 8 is what it deserves because it's not perfect. It's not one of the best things ever, but it has merit. So yeah, with an 8 and an 8, we get a 4 out of 5 for Face of Faces. Our next category is lengthiness. How long do you think this man reigned?
A while, actually. I'm going to say 10 years.
That is exactly correct. He reigned 10 years from 293 to 303, which means we're in the 4th century, Serial. There are plenty of new things that will happen now. Oh, we've turned over a new leaf. It is kind of wild that we entered the 3rd century with the Parthians, and now this is a very different world. But, you know, that's what centuries do. They take time.
Yeah. Although, like, I would think a century doesn't take that long in, like, generation-wise. But, of course, we've had more than one king that, you know, didn't last a generation.
Generation-wise, it's only been 3 generations. It's been, like, Narseh, Shapur, and Ardashir.
Yeah.
You can get to the previous century with that.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've had issues in the middle.
Yeah. And those issues stuff are happened. Called Bahram. All of them.
Yes, all 3 of them are called Bahram. So yeah, so take 10 years, divided by 10, we get 1 out of 5 for lengthiness.
I'm not going to recover from this episode. Heck. Or maybe I'll forget all about it. Kind of how I forgot Alexander's death until the lovely people at the Alexander Standard brought it up in our crossover episode, and it came back to me after my brain had completely deleted it to protect my mind from the horrors. So I don't know, maybe it'll happen the same to this episode.
We'll see. That brings us to the final score, which is a grand total of 29 out of 100 for lengthiness, which makes him only 0.2 points better than Bahram the first, and worse than Bahram the second.
Yeah.
By not much, to be fair.
Sadly,
0.9
I think
points. But yeah.
Yeah. I think that tracks.
Yeah, in global standing, he is just below Mithridates the fourth and just above Alexander the first. So it's not great. Narseh could have done a lot better. It could
But he
be.
Didn't, though, and he is to blame. At least if
know,
we
but
go
it's
from
just,
what we have.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm so sad.
And that brings us to the final question, which is to ask, is he tragic enough? Is he potential enough? Is he sad enough to be a Shahanshah, or is he just a Shahanah? And I think it's worth discussing.
Yep, same. I was going to be like,
Because I do like how he's always in the background of all the Bahrams, and he's just constantly annoyed, and you see him doing really well. And then when he arrives, it's just like, oh no, it's a tragic ending. It's Orpheus turning back to look at Eurydice. It's just like, Narseh, you were so close. You were doing so well, my boy.
I don't know if I can, like, emotionally recover from this episode. That's why I'm like, maybe he should
really
be a Shahanshah, because, like, honestly...
I feel like if you feel that strongly about him...
For the wrong reasons, sadly.
I'm tempted to give it...
Usually I would love to give, like, a Shahanshah to someone who's, like, incredible in a good way.
Yeah.
But, this was the whiplash I called in this episode.
Yeah, I feel like there's so much potential, and then it's just like a classic myth structure where it's like, oh, don't worry,
your
the
hubris.
Heroic king is going to come back, it's going to be fine, and then he comes back, and then, oh no, sorry, your hubris.
Yeah.
Ah no, my hubris.
Oh no, not my hubris.
Not my one weakness, being better than everyone.
I know that all the heroes get taken down by the gods because of their hubris, but this won't happen to me because I'm better than all of them. I might be better than the gods themselves.
So yes, that's him. That's Narseh.
God. Oh, the pain.
Yeah, I'm gonna argue that he deserves it.
Yeah, I want to give it to him because, like, it is such an episode. We've been talking about him for like 3 episodes long at least. Plus our Patreon episode.
Yeah, Patreon episode on Cartier. We go more into what
happened. So in total, we've had like Cartier, 5 episodes where he's been like thoroughly mentioned.
Yeah, I think he definitely deserves it because...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's...
I agree. Let's give it to him.
Sad,
let's give it
it's
to
just
him.
Like, I think the fact that we're sad is reason enough to
give
it to him.
I am devastated. Don't get me wrong. I can't believe the betrayal. Top 10 anime betrayals. What he just did to me.
Yeah. So, well, congratulations, Narsé. Your tragedy grants you a spot as Shahanshah. You can go into the Paradise Gardens, meet your dad, Shapur, and tell him, you are so sorry. You tried your best, but you failed ultimately and reversed all his
gains. Then
maybe
he can kill you himself.
He might. Who knows? It happens.
Yeah, and you might let him. Because, like, with what a good guy you've been and how, like, you know.
Yeah, you did a good job, my dude. It happens.
First he's going to be like, how would you let Bahram do this? You idiot.
Yeah.
And then he would be like, also, what the hell happened there?
I looked at the map. It's the same as when I took it. What happened?
Were that leases not
Did I dream
worse?
All that? What happened? I guess.
At the least, we can do the same we did before.
Yeah, we can just have a rematch. We just need a new Shapur to take the throne and just redo everything. It'll be easy.
Harsh.
So, yeah. That is the end of today's episode. We hope you enjoyed, if that is the right word, Narsé.
Sure, we hope you enjoyed it so much. I enjoyed it thoroughly.
And we hope you'll join us next time for Hormizd the Second. Will he live up to his namesake? Will he live longer, I hope?
Okay. Glad to know your own hopes.
Yeah. Will he make up for Narsé's failures? Will he be another Bahram? Who knows?
Well, hopefully not that bad.
We'll see.
Because, like, we need a good one now, guys.
Yeah, we definitely
especially
need a
with
good
Rome
time.
Being back, so...
Yeah, they are so back.
I hate
Rome
that.
Rome is so back right now.
I hate when they're so back. Can't they just stay on the ground?
Yeah. Also, some kid named Constantine is in Britain doing stuff. I don't know if that's going to be important, but we'll find out. He might found a city after himself. Who knows?
Okay, well, join us on our next episode. I'm sure everything will be fine. Goodbye, everybody.
If you'd like to support us for the pain we've given
you. Oh, yeah, you can do that, too.
You can join us on Patreon.
Pay for my therapy. Thank you.
Yeah. You can get extra episodes. We have one on Cartier, so you can get more context on the Bahrams and the religious stuff that was happening. We're going to have an episode on Mani soon. That'll be interesting.
Yeah.
You can have an episode on the Moria Emperors, on Mithridates the Poison King, on Alcibiades, a bunch of other interesting people. Join up for a small fee, and you can support us and also get a say in which episodes get made. That's cool.
If you'd rather not support us monetarily, which is fine, you know, nobody has money, it's okay. But you can still help us by telling your friends that we exist and leaving us a review on your podcast app of choice, because that really helps us getting found by other people, and like we can, you know, grow the Persia family, and it'll be really fun. So we would appreciate it.
Yeah, and in that case, without any further ado, we hope you have a lovely week, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.